Let's... Well, let
me... How do we even go about it?
Do you ever find yourself wondering, why are my balls so stinky?
Fuck pain. Fuck heartbreak. I'm still in love with life.
From the multicultural headquarters of the future capital of the free-thinking states of America known as Los Angeles, this is the Drunken Taoist Podcast. Tonight, another grand Rich and Bellelli show, ever eclectic and including an Italian summer update. Excitement builds as the Ventura County Fair becomes competitive. Surviving a well-timed bird poop. Graffiti love for the Drunken Taoist. Gelatos. Modern cannibals, and those fleeting incredible moments when you are really happy. Here we go. And now, asking you all to spread the words that corporations are not persons, I'm Rich Evers. And my partner in crime, the savage philosopher and middle finger of the gods, Daniele Bolelli. As we invite you to lower the lights, batten down the hatches, and prepare to open your mind. For the Drunken Taoist Podcast begins now. Welcome back, everybody. Another fine episode of the Drunken Taoist Podcast, episode 161. Fresh back from Italy, Mr. Daniele Bolelli.
Yeah.
I'm fresh back from Oxnard, where the temperature is delicious. While the valley melts, we enjoy the cool ocean breezes.
Not a bad gig.
Didn't have to fly as far, though.
Yeah, well, it's the pizza quality maybe not quite up there, but close enough, good enough.
When you go to Ojai to check it out, be sure to go to Bocelli's. It sits inside between an olive grove and an orange grove.
I shall do that.
And their antipasto salad, I think you will find.
And I'll have to say, hey, you guys almost stole my last name.
I did, actually.
I need a discount at least.
You'll probably get one.
So... on that happy note, let's say a few thanks to some folks keeping us in business. Omni.com. Those guys are such studs for sponsoring us all this time. If you guys can do me a huge favor and go through our link to the Omni website, that would be onnit.com/Taoist with the T. You get an automatic discount on a bunch of their products. If you please can check if I mean, as usual, I'm not telling you guys to buy stuff you don't need. That's just stupid and not what I believe in. But if you do find things that can make your life better, and my bet is that at least something at the Onnit website will be to your liking, please go through our link and you will make everybody happy. Big shout out to also grasslandbeef.com. Mm. I suck horrendously because I messed up the last order and I did not order Richie's steak after he enjoyed the previous one. There's a decent chance that we're not going to finish this episode because Rich is going to beat me with a microphone into submission.
No reason for violence.
He's just sad, which is making me horrendously sad. But yes, grasslandbeef.com is amazing. If you eat beef, duck, chicken, pork, human, bison, anything. No, not human, but everything else.
I'm mixing my story.
Yes, so. You're missing story. Grasslandbeef.com is the way to go. In this particular episode, but we're not going to touch on now, we're sponsored by Manscaped. This is going to be so funny, man. I've waited for like 2 weeks ever since they gave the order to be able to do this ad, because this is going to be enjoyable.
We're finally going to get things under control and tidied up around here.
Most definitely. I want to give a shout out. I haven't tested yet, but I want to give a shout out to coldsteel.com. Those guys make amazing knives and other things, but what they sent me, which is glorious, I can't wait to test it, I haven't done so yet, is their crossbow. I am ready for the zombie apocalypse. Check this out. This is what it looks like.
Oh, that's awesome.
Badass crossbow. Not even that expensive. So if you guys want to check it out,
are there like 10-inch bolts or how big are those?
Less than $300 for their crossbow. It's super cool. Mark Chang, Dr. Mark Chang, that we'll mention very soon in the episode,
fame?
Already has that, and he was telling me this thing is like so addictive. It's incredibly fun. If you have watched The Walking Dead and you wanted to be Daryl, now is your chance. So I'll put the link in the episode notes for the crossbow from Cold Steel. And I'll give you a full report in a different episode after I have a chance to properly test it, which I couldn't while I was in Italy, of course. Other things we should mention. Oh, big shout out to a guy who's our new hero, Mr. Randy Cole.
Yes.
I'll put a link in the episode notes. This dude is a man, what a stud. It is what he did. He created a comic book, and in this comic book, well, I'll let Rich tell us.
In one of the frames, there's some delightful graffiti across one building, and there's the big yin yang, and there's Di Bolelli, and even says Epic Rich down in the corner,
so
which
that's...
I was quite delighted by. I don't think I've ever been so honored in my life.
There's even a Savannah shout out.
That's
so
right.
So there's, yeah, the man is awesome. Thank you so much for this beautiful Easter egg throwing there in his comic book. I'll put the link to the ebook if you guys want to check it out on Amazon.
Yes, thank you so much.
All of his good stuff. Randy, you are awesome. Of course, thank you to Shore Design T-shirts. You guys know the drill with them. And thank you to Never Tap Gear for sponsoring Savannah. Other than that, I think we can roll.
Yeah, episode of Chaos, and here it comes.
Let's do this.
Is the bell a moment? Boom, boom, boom.
Here we go.
Italy edition.
Italy edition. Yeah, it was fun, man. I had a blast.
But it was hot.
It was insanely hot. And, but you know what? It was one thing that was trippy is that I've never been as zen as in this period in Italy. Nothing was bothering me. I was in a good mood every day. I had, even when I stayed up to work way too late, which is pretty much every night.
That's just the way it is.
I had good energy anyway in the morning. I felt great. And I think, you know, a lot of it is living by example in the opposite way, in the sense that Italy, everybody, I don't mean, okay, yeah, I do mean to pick. It's, after all, is the culture I grew up in. So I have, I'm entitled to pick on it, right?
That's sure.
God damn, people whine a lot. There's a lot of complaining and whining and reacting. I mean, part of it is the Italian stereotype of like being highly emotional about everything. So if like a pencil fall on your foot,
the
you go,
"Pencils on my foot! Oh, how am I going to survive this whine?"
Exactly. And you're like, dude, you don't have to react to everything. You know, it can be so seeing how much people make a big deal about every little thing. Help me work on being the exact opposite of just being, how about I'm just gonna play happy stoic and relax and not be freaked out by every little thing. And it's a theme that actually I want to hammer with Isabella a lot this year. That's gonna be my mission for the year, because one thing, Izzy is super smart. She has a huge heart. She has a lot of qualities. She tends to be way too critical, and sometimes with good reason, right? It's like she has this person fucked up and this is why they fucked up and this is why it's wrong. And I'm like, yeah, I completely agree. You're right. So fucking what?
It's not really your business.
Well, and even if it is in a personal interaction, sure, between you two, how is you pointing out they fucked up going to solve the situation? I get it. You know, we can say it and then we agree. Now let's move on. Where's the next part? The part where you come around and figure out how to make the situation better? Because ultimately all your intelligence doesn't mean shit if you can do something positive with it, you know? And so we watched this thing that, maybe I'll put a link in the episode notes. There was this awesome YouTube video that's like the perfect introduction to stoicism in a cartoon version. There's this guy, look like he has a katana at his side and he's sitting in this dojo meditating, right? And he's all there meditating in perfect lotus position. And then there's a fly start flying, gets on his face. He's trying to stay meditating. He's squinting. He's doing his this. And he finally can take it. The fly flies off. He pulls out his sword. If you ask me, tiny bit of an overreaction, sword versus fly. He's amazing, so he chopped the fly in half in flight.
And didn't lop his nose off?
No.
Okay.
Put his sword back in, sit back down. Ah, now I can finally meditate. That one fly, we see it split in half on the floor, turns into two full flies, and now there are two full flies flying around. And before you know it, with his hacking and chopping and slices, there are like 5,000 flies in these dojos, and he's going nuts and he's losing it. And that's when he realized, what am I doing? And he starts relaxing in the middle of all the chaos, of all the crazy flies everywhere, and they all drop off. And suddenly they are not there anymore. And the thing that's interesting to me is that that's stoicism in a nutshell. That's life in a nutshell, which is like, yeah, there are going to be 10,000 things that are going to piss you off, that are going to get under your skin, that are going to bother you. It's understood. I get it. But you trying to aggressively tackle every one of them is not going to make your life better.
It's going to make you sleepy.
One. And just the energy that you give to it, the anger.
Wasted.
If you're going to pay attention to that thing, then that other thing you're going to pay attention to, and then the other one, and the other one, and the other one. And before you know it, you're spending all your time just being mad at stuff and trying to. And so it's not to deny that there are annoying things. The flies are there and they are getting on your face while you're trying to meditate, and they are, you know, shit is annoying. The point is, don't react emotionally to every one of them, because that only makes the problem worse. And I was like, I showed it to Iz and it clicked immediately with her. She was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. Like, damn right. Now, understanding it and practicing are two very different things.
It takes a while. That's a long lesson to learn.
But I'm like, let's watch this every single day. Let's talk about this every single day. Let's, because I need it. I mean, I would guess that 99.9% people on Earth who are not perfect saints kind of need to be reminded of the message.
Hell yeah.
Iz definitely needs it. And so I was, Italy was fun because I had a 3-week period where I was putting that in practice very well. And I was like, oh my God, life feels so much better in this period. I dig this. I dig not reacting to everything. I dig actually taking pride in little things that would normally set me off, not let them set me off.
What kind of... Are you in a big city? Are you in Milan? Or are you out in the countryside?
Yeah. Or? I was in Milan for about a week. Big city. Really fucking hot. Then we went to the seaside, which was awesome. Spent a week just hanging out. Isabella play with her grandpa. We have a good lunch. We have gelato. We hop on a bicycle. We bike a couple of miles down to the beach. We hang out on the beach. Go back home. Eat. Life could be a lot worse.
Yeah,
right?
That's pretty rough.
And then we came back to Milano. I did the one day when Savannah visited too, and we went up to the mountains. That was beautiful. That was really like...
Is that the bottom of the Alps there? Or?
Yeah. And that was amazing. That was like crazy hikes, just like vertical hikes. They were really, really steep, but fun. And completely diverging from an Isabella theme thing. I'll tell you a story about this, because we were with a friend at his family's house out there. And, you know, it's a little tiny, even calling it a town is a stretch, because it's probably 200 people, right? It's like this tiny little village in the mountains. And we are hanging out and we are hiking, and he starts telling us the story of his father, who is now 90 something. And his father was, when he was between 17 and 19, he was a partisan at the end of World War II. And he was there in the mountains with his friends, and they would live in the mountains the whole time. No houses. I mean, live really in the mountains, just camping out the whole time. And,
wow.
And they would just fight Germans and fascists. And that was their thing. They would come down from the mountain, they would shoot at them, they would go back. And this was their life for 3 years, basically, right? And he told us this crazy story that when the fascist regime was falling, the Germans were leaving Italy, he and his friends received word that on their way out, the Germans were planning to bomb this dam at the top of the mountain. They would basically flood the whole valley, killing everybody there. And a couple of reasons. One, revenge. and one to slow down allied troops that would have been chasing them up that pass, eventually slow down their advance into Germany, right? So he and these guys went out, fought the Germans, stopped them. They didn't get to blow up the dam. And that was such a trip to think that this guy, I mean, I've met the guy. He's like 2 feet tall. He's this tiny little dude. And he's to think that what that guy and his friends did basically saved like everybody I would see in the valley, that little village, the one next door, the other one. Most of them survived because of what this guy did back in the 40s, because otherwise their parents or grandparents would have been flooded in and killed. And I was like, holy shit, that's what the kid, 17 to 19 year old kid, did back then, saved the entire valley, basically.
Isn't that amazing? I think 19 year olds were lining up to storm the beaches in Normandy.
Yep.
Nowadays, your 19 year olds get triggered and need their own special room to hide in when they get upset.
But I think, like anything else, is what you're exposed to. Right.
It's
like
what I'm
it's education. It's you know, if somebody give you, like, genetically people are the same, right?
So they
just don't
have a proper mission, is what you're saying.
It's if you need to do it, you'll probably figure out very quickly, either die or get into gear and figure out how to get it done. It's but yeah, it's trippy, man, to think about what. Yeah, you think a 17-year-old is like a kid, and he's like, nope, that's like a hero who saved a village.
What do you think of the idea of a national service, not totally military, like perhaps AmeriCorps or Peace Corps, things like that? Because that transition from high school to college, you see them all the time. A lot of them aren't ready at all, are they?
Sure. I think it depends on how it's done.
Yeah.
Because Italy had a mandatory military service when I was growing up. And the option was, if you don't want to do military service, which it was an option, you could do civil service of some kind. But the reality of what that meant was, they put you in a library to, okay, alphabetize this section of the library between A and Z, or go. It was essentially a waste of time. Like, they would just make you go through the motion, waste a year of your life, and that was it, right? So I think the concept is cool. The reality that I saw wasn't cool. So it really is, it's the usual dilemma. If you or me got to be made emperors of the world and we got to design that, you would probably could turn out a cool thing. But if some nameless bureaucrat think, how can we utilize the time of some 18-year-olds for the next year, is going to turn into a waste that everybody hates.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's unfortunately what... That's the problem with ideas, is who's implementing them. Because that's what makes all the difference, you know? But speaking of summer stuff, I'll tell you one more Isabella thing. Right after we came back in LA was mighty hot, and I figure, you know what, I'm just gonna drive up 2 hours and take her. She hasn't school yet. I can work anywhere. So I just took her up to the mountains around here, went to Big Bear, and, you know, 30 degrees cooler. And it was actually very weird weather, rained every day, which I actually love in summer to cool things down. Yeah. It was beautiful. And it's just me and her, right? And even on the drive up, we were driving up the mountain, which that drive itself is amazing because you start seeing forest all around you and it's beautiful and you feel good there, right? And as we're driving, we're listening to, you know, she's my DJ, so she's putting all the music, and she was going for a solid. It was a mix of The Clash, Tupac, Eminem, mixed with some sweet oldies from Smokey Robinson to The Drifters. It was a whole very eclectic thing, right? And at one point, it's getting night. You know, we drove kind of late, and we are riding up. Sun is going down. We're in the middle of the forest. And this just blurts out, I am really happy. And I knew exactly what she meant. It wasn't just I'm happy, like we're listening to cool music or right now. It was just, man, my life is good. I'm digging it. This is fun. This I'm enjoying. And And I was like, yeah, man, I really feel the same. There's that deep-seated happiness about who we are, where we are. We love each other. This is fun. This is, I enjoy my time with you, you know. And I thought back about it. And he's like, okay, this is 2019. Back 8 years before 2011, I'm like, her mom had just died. Or we lost our house. My career was going nowhere and was crashing and burning quickly. The odds that 8 years later we would be in a car having a blast going, hey, I'm really happy with where we are in life, weren't exactly the best. You know, they did not look like that.
They didn't
in
look
2011.
That way.
No.
When you're down in the pit, nothing looks good.
Yes. And so I was like, man, this is good. This is good. I mean, shit can and always happen. And so it's not to say, oh, now we made it because, you know, next 3 hours later, there's something that changes everything.
The earthquake will be here soon enough.
Right. But the point was, yeah, man, sometimes there's a way to turn it around. And partial is what we did. Partial is luck. It's a combination of both agency and luck
for
that
sure.
play into it. But there's that moment where you're looking at everything and you go like, I'm having fun here. Life is good, you know. And it was great. It was a blast. I had a really great time with her.
Jim Croce would recommend you bottle that moment.
Right? Of course, because those are the special moments when you go, this is as good as it's going to get.
Yeah.
You know, there are probably going to be other moments that if you're lucky are going to be as good, but it doesn't get any better.
It's nice to appreciate it while it's happening, though, and not look back on it. Oh, that was a pretty good day.
Yep. No, that's the beauty.
We were having the same sort of conversations, like despite all the turmoil and the insanity and the moments where it's like, you know, how are we going to get the rent paid? And just,
of course.
But when you look back, you know, I had a focus. I worked on a Beatles documentary. I got to do a movie about the space launches.
Right.
I mean,
being a miner in Bulgaria is probably a worse life.
For
you
sure.
Know? So it's, yeah, I can see how it's being able to appreciate it.
Yes, and it's never going to be great constantly. You know what? You probably even wouldn't like that. If everything was great, if you got everything you wanted every day.
I'm down. I'm willing to take that experiment. Let's do that.
It would be interesting to see. I think there would be some point the frustration of having your ass properly licked constantly would make you want some sandpaper in your life.
I am absolutely in favor of trying that experiment. You know, it's like, I wouldn't mind, you know, I'm totally cool with finding out, oh, that was not what I wanted. But, you know, having things going your way a lot, that doesn't suck.
I don't know. But you would lose your, you'd lose something. A motivation or a drive or something. If you were constantly placating.
No, but I mean, I think it's like, we live in a universe where that's so
impossible
anyway.
Yeah.
Because there's so much shit that you have to deal with in life that maybe making it a smidgen easier wouldn't suck.
No, who wouldn't take it? I understand that. I don't know. If it wasn't for assholes, you wouldn't appreciate good people.
That could be. I would like to change the percentage a little. I wouldn't buy just one asshole every 6 months just so you appreciate the rest as opposed
every
to being
6 hours.
Yeah, so that would be... I think we can keep the concept changing the percentages there. That would be nice. But I think it's like back to where we started with the whole stoicism fly thing. That ties to what you were saying right now about the appreciating it when it's happening. There's always a reason not to appreciate it. You know, there's always a reason to go like, oh, the sun is going down. We are going to be late. We wanted to eat sooner. It's going to be late by the time we get there.
We only have 3 days
left.
Oh,
we have only 3 days left. Oh, it's too something, right? There's always, if you pay attention to it, I'm sure you can find something reasonable to be upset about every single moment of every single day.
How'd you know my mother-in-law was coming?
Right? There's that as well. And the thing is like, yeah, but there's also other stuff where you can put your attention to, right? Where you can have, where you can let that fly buzzing sort of fade into the background to the point where you barely even hear it because you are so focused on something else that's making you happy. And that's where it's a practice, you know, because it's like, hey, but I hear the fly. Okay, let's work on making it go in the background. Because it's easy to say it. It's hard to actually do it, right?
For sure.
And so to just make it a daily practice of self-improvement, that's badass right there. That's what makes, but it's its own reward, because then as you get good at it, your life gets exponentially better in the process. So not to say that it's easy, not to say just, oh, smell the roses, life is good. It's like, no, there's a lot of real shit to deal with. But again, there's no reward for, nobody's going to pat you on the back to say, oh, poor, poor you, you're dealing with a lot of heavy shit. That's so unfortunate. We should reward you. It's not the way it works. And so if it's up to you to be able to make that shift in consciousness, I can't think of too many more worthwhile efforts, worthwhile way to put your energy in, because you're going to become a happier person, a more pleasant person, nicer to those around you. Other people are going to pick up on your energy and they're probably going to respond in some way or another. So it's like, that's life in a nutshell. That's what you can do to make your life and the life of people around you more pleasant.
It's definitely worth a try. Did you try to implement in the small Italian village, or they were too happy complaining about?
No, it was cool. It was cool. It was, and again, it's so much, it's definitely easier when you're trying to, because if you're feeling satisfied, if you're feeling happy, if you're feeling that, you, I know I'm not going to let the little shit bother me, then you're extra nice to people. And when you're extra nice to people, sometimes people respond. Sometimes they don't, because they are too wrapped up in their own bullshit, but sometimes people respond. And it may not be dramatic, but you give somebody an extra smile that day. You know, you give somebody a little thing that if they are teetering, choosing to go, I'm going to be depressed or I'm going to be in a good mood, maybe that turns that hour in a better mood, you know?
I'd love to try that. I would walk around with, long ago I was told, smile, people are wondering what you're up to.
Right.
But it is effective.
It is.
Especially like, I love, you know how people love to avert their gaze mm-hmm. in these big cities.
Of course.
But you catch some person and hit them with a smile.
Right.
You usually get a reaction.
Absolutely.
And you're right about that. That is enough to change somebody's day.
Yep. Worthwhile effort, right? I mean, you're going to go through your day anyway. Might as well do it in a way that makes you feel good and as a shot at making someone else feel good.
It's story time, everybody!
And what a story this is.
All right.
One of our faithful listeners, Mr. Tony Loquasto, sent put this thing on Facebook, and I made the mistake of clicking on this link on this article. And, oh, man, I can always count on Tony for horrendously disturbing stories, and he definitely did not fail this time. So here is the tale. This was, I found it on, it's an article on Vice.com where it's a tale from 2016 of some guy in US who chose to remain anonymous for obvious reasons, who, he had an accident. He was riding, I forget if a bicycle or a motorcycle or something. Yeah, motorcycle. Had a really nasty accident. One of his feet just got shattered to the point where there was just no way he could ever walk on it again. So they had to amputate below the knee. So that does not exactly start like a happy story. Well, don't worry, it's not gonna could. Well, it's not gonna be worse in the sense that it's not gonna be sadder. It's just gonna be a lot weirder real soon. So
I'm almost afraid.
You should be. You really should be. And because you are a hero of the people, unlike everybody listening who's just going to be get the verbal version, you're going to get a couple of pictures.
Ooh.
And that's going to be something to be afraid of. So the lead character in our story would have one lower leg less. Ask the doctor to be able to keep the lower leg. And the dog said, sure, here you go. Pack the knives, take it, do whatever. Do whatever was probably something that they should have thought about a little bit. Because the good man goes back home, puts the leg in the freezer, invite 10 of his best friends.
No, he didn't.
Yes, tell them what's going on.
He's about to feed his calf muscle to his pals.
They decide to have a nice party.
They decided?
Yeah, everybody knows what's up.
They know what's up.
They know what's up. So I guess they were 10 of his more open-minded friends.
I don't think I can come up with 10 cannibals.
By the way, there's no federal law against eating your human own leg? Meat. Exactly. So it's technically legal in the U.S.
You can't eat that possum I ran over this morning, but you can certainly eat the leg you got chopped off yes. after your motorcycle wreck.
So they have apple strudel, some pastry, fruit tarts, chocolate cake, mimosas, and some fajita tacos made from their buddy's leg.
No. I've brought some placenta!
Jesus Christ. So, and you know, they go about it the only way you can go about it, with horrendously dark humor. So, you know, one of them is like, hey, sorry to tell you, but I pooped you out this morning.
Oh.
Or another, the lead character is like, you know, today I had a crazy day. I was inside 10 of my friends at the same time.
Oh, my God.
But, yeah. So, here you go with a nice picture of bell peppers and human steak.
So, what did they say? Did they comment on it? Because I was only from my Aztec reading.
Right.
They say a good thigh tastes like a good pork loin.
Right. Tastes just like pig.
Which makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So that's exactly one of the questions in the article is. So obvious question. How did it taste? Answer.
My God.
People think it tastes like pork because in movies we hear it called the long pig. But that originates from Papua New Guinea, where they eat wild boar. So they are not eating our big, fat, domesticated pigs. Boars don't have white meat. They just don't. So it's a little closer to eating boar. The muscle I cut was tough and chewy. Tasted good, but the experience wasn't the best.
Oh, my God. A director friend of mine did a movie. Ryan Turner is his name, and the name of his escape was a little short, but it was about a guy who lost his arm.
Okay.
And he missed his arm so much, he went and dug it up and reattached the floppy dead thing.
No.
And yeah, it was pretty ridiculous and quite awesome. I'll try to remember the name of it, but...
Wow.
So there's a lot of that going on in people's minds, apparently.
Wow. That's some weird. And the guy explained it. He's like, hey, you know, it was such a horrendous experience to lose my leg and whatever. I need something to give it closure. I need something to... I understand that part. The eating your own leg in the company of 10 friends may go a little beyond what I would call closure, but hey, to each their own. And
how much damage do they have to do? I mean, is it just easier to cut it at the knee? Didn't have a dangling. I mean, it sounded like the foot was crushed.
Foot was gone. I'm imagining that probably probably the sheen and fibula were gone.
But that's a decision that had to be made pretty quick.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, hey, by the way, Doc, if you could drop that on ice for me.
Right.
Because we're going to have, and fajitas, how evil is that, man? That's a lot of seasoning in there. You could hide that and fool anybody.
Yeah. So,
and what if it becomes now I must have more. We did a silly crackle. Sony Crackle did these sort of okay Twilight Zone things.
Right.
But one was about a chef that things just weren't going well. So he started putting his own blood into all the recipes.
Ooh.
And all of a sudden,
everybody
the place
loved
is a hit. And his sous chef found out what's going on. So she ended up just chaining him into a chair and just draining him every night for dinner time.
This is
Twilight Zone.
Okay, good. I was like, I hope this is not a real story.
Well,
but...
it was inspired by some guy who cut his leg off and fed it to his friends.
So. Yeah, and by the way, just to give a happy ending to one of the most disturbing story of all times, this is what he says afterward. Things worked out so damn well afterward. My
See?
Life has gotten so much better. I left the town I was in and the job of 10 years that was killing me emotionally. I moved to another state.
Opened a restaurant.
I have a way better job that I enjoy the hell out of. I've met a woman who I've been with for over a year and a half now, and she's the best thing in my life. I'm so much happier now than I could conceive of being before. And it's because of this time where my life was threatened and I persevered through it. Eating my foot was a funny and weird and interesting way to move forward.
Oh, that lady better be careful, because if she's like, I'm going to eat you. I mean, that could have all sorts of connotations. Maybe that something that there's nothing left over when you're done.
Yeah, that's so. In any case,
that's fucked up.
Happy story time of the day, everybody.
Wow.
Yes.
Anybody got some salt and pepper?
So that's the question. Your friend had a horrendous accident.
I'm not going to eat your leg, man. I'm sorry. I might come back and watch motherfuckers do it so I can make a little list. Cannibal, 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 cannibal. Just so we know for the future.
But
when the zombie apocalypse comes, you got to take those motherfuckers out first because they're going to be like, oh, no, no, fuck no. Man, I won't even eat octopus because they hold tentacles and love each other. I think I'm going to eat somebody's fucking gnarly ass ransacked. Oh, God.
That's good stuff.
Of course, as we've always said, if the food truck stopped rolling by day three, Ellie's out of food. Ask me again on day seven.
Yeah, somehow.
Get the barbecue going.
You know, somehow that disturbed me a lot less than the idea of the dude who had an accident carried his leg home. I don't know, man. There's something about it.
Bon appetit.
Yeah. With some Chianti.
And some fava beans.
Yes.
Oh my God, it's a mid-roll. For all you people who hate mid-rolls.
Yes, we had somebody on iTunes write as a review that they listen from the beginning and they quit the one time we did a mid-roll ad. Normally, I can see the point. I'm not a fan of mid-rolls. However, we're going to do this one because this is not an ad like any other ad. This is going to be good fun times. How do we even go about it?
Do you ever find yourself wondering, why are my balls so stinky? It is the sweaty summertime, and I do have a shower, but occasionally...
Some problems occur. So here we go, because support for Drunken Taoist comes from Manscaped, number one in men's below-the-belt grooming. Manscaped offer precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. So let's go with this. This is going to be fun, so let's run with it. You know what one of the things that I hate the most is when you are just about to fall asleep, you're all mellow and quiet and everything is peaceful, and suddenly you hear somebody screaming banzai right from your crotch, and you realize that because of the jungle shape of your pubic hair, there's actually a Japanese soldier who doesn't know that World War II is over that's still hiding in there. And then, you know...
I've been here since 1944.
Exactly. And so the only way to properly take care of that and make sure that you're not woken up by the screams of a Japanese soldier who doesn't know that World War II is over is with some good trimming. And these guys have the tools for the job.
Do they ever?
Could you use the same tool they use for your face?
That would be nasty.
Yes, that would be very nasty. So there's a special tool for your grooming needs in the pubic area. You know, you may find, what's the name of the lady, the famous aviator, Amelia
Earhart?
Of course. I'm sure if you, after a good shave,
somebody
you may
out
probably
there might find
her hiding in there.
Oh, there's much more dangerous things hiding in there, I'm sure.
You know, there's like Indiana Jones looking for the Temple of Doom in there. There's like all sort of things that if you haven't taken care of properly in a while, you may run into.
I tell you, it's not just for your groinal area either. A fellow with a seriously healthy chest hair that wants to get himself beach ready. Kind of medium.
My mainly Italian hair is...
Yeah. I'm afraid I have the more of the Norwegian blue-eyed problem. I ain't got a damn hair on my body barely.
No?
So
really?
I'm just going to have to enjoy this by far. But in case I need to shave my hair, it's not just the lawnmower to take care of your thatchy, manly, super pube-ridden 1970s bush action. Get that down to the new century. They also have the plow to shave your head clean.
Jesus, this is genius. So you can get 20% off plus free shipping with the promo code DRUNKEN. Seems appropriate. With the promo code DRUNKEN at manscaped.com. That's manscaped.com.
Refining the gentleman.
I will put a link in the episode notes, and trust me, your balls will thank you.
They're going to thank you a lot more when you get a hold of some crop preserver, which is literally labeled as anti-chafing ball deodorant.
Ball deodorant.
Do not enter the world one more time with stinky balls.
You know what was missing from your life that makes things so much better.
I didn't know it, but now that I do know it, oh, there's toner and refresher too.
Oh my
so
God.
I guess you got to have aftershave. Anyway, fellas, if you seem to have a problem, underwear not fitting properly, too hard getting the zipper shut because there's too much fur spilling out of your crotchal area, these guys are for you.
This makes me happy to do ads. Just the chance of talking about the Japanese soldier hiding in your groin, that made me very happy.
Banzai! I don't even know what we're doing. Are we ranting? Are we raving?
Sure, let's
this
rant.
This is raving.
Yes, ranting and raving.
I just saw a story the other day. Did you know they never sold a Bob Ross painting, not one?
How come? Do tell.
It's a crazy thing. Apparently, every time they would do a show, he would paint what he was going to paint before the show. He would paint what he painted on the show. And then he would paint that same thing a third time. And I can't remember exactly how it worked, but I think the best one would go to the woman who is the director of the show.
Sure.
That, you know, just says thanks for, so she like has the best of all of them.
Right.
And then the rest are kind of still owned by his foundation. And those people literally thought, oh, I don't think anybody'd ever really want one of those, would they?
Really? They just thought, do you want to, for people who have no idea who Bob Ross is, do you want to give a little background?
Oh, yeah.
To
Bob Ross is this crazy cat, and I'm sure you've probably seen him. He's got a giant afro, and he did the joy of painting for probably 20 years on PBS, and he's the one who's going to paint a happy little tree here.
Right.
He's got a nice little friend of rock, and they hang out together, I guess they were 30. They might have been an hour, but it feels like they were 30 minutes. He would crank out these incredible landscapes that just...
No time.
And looked like when he started, with a lot of painters, you see this, like, there's no way that's going to turn into anything. And by the time he was done, there was this mountainscape with waterfalls and the sunset and the birds flying and just incredibly talented.
Beautiful.
And started this silly little show, and it just went on for years and years, and people loved it. So, yeah, and it's all on the internet now.
Sweet.
And you can watch them all and paint along.
And they are still not selling them?
I don't know how it actually... This was like just sort of the discovery that that was going on. A whole other thing I heard is, did you know they kept Einstein's brain?
Did somebody eat it?
No, they probably thought about it, though. But
if we eat his brain, we'll absorb his intelligence.
Well, the guy who was set to do the autopsy, I think he was like at Yale or something. Like,
right.
So Einstein dies, and they're like, do the autopsy. He literally plopped the brain in a jar and split.
Wow. That is weird.
And it just, yeah. And the family was furious. And like,
I'm sure.
It went on for years. And he was not a neurology expert. And this is like the 50s anyway. Nobody knew anything anyway.
Yeah, that kind of looks like brain. Let's pull that out.
And kind of just got forgotten.
Wow.
And some guy in the mid-70s said, well, I heard this story about someone had Einstein's brain. Looked the guy up in the phone book. Are you who you are? They're in Michigan or somewhere. Flew out. Where's the brain?
Wow.
And he had sliced a lot of it, but he still had the tissue left.
I smell a Dan Brown novel about that.
It was pretty crazy.
That's just weird.
And they actually returned it. I think Yale or Harvard, whichever one, actually has the remnants of it now.
Wow. So weird.
Because his big concern was he wanted to be cremated immediately because he didn't want to be buried somewhere where people could start...
worshipping him.
Yep. That was his greatest fear.
I don't mind worship. I'm down with worship.
Well, he's somebody kind of worthy of it. I mean, his shit continues to deliver.
Yeah.
The gravitational wave stuff is
gangster stuff.
Over and over again that he thought up in his mind.
Gangster stuff.
And they did, like, search through his brain, and there was some sort of, like, crevice of some kind, that his was actually shorter than most people. And they thought it could be possible that that narrower path, but
and,
you'll never know.
And also that determined his haircut, which I share with him.
I'm kind of getting there myself.
That's my style.
You know?
Well, it's a good style to have. The Einstein haircut, yes.
You look a little disheveled. Bernie's right. Been rocking it for
exactly,
a while.
Exactly, exactly. That style. Well, since we're going into random, it's not really a rant. It's just a random time to throw in
excellent.
All sort of things. I'll tell you a very dramatic story. So we're outdoors with Savannah and Isabella. We're hanging out, and I see this beautiful golden retriever. And so I comment at how just amazing that looks. I'm like, look at that dog. That's so beautiful. Savannah just smugly implies, yeah, sure, but actually doesn't imply. Flat out say that our epic dog, Azog the Defiler, is much better looking.
Ooh.
So just to provoke her, I replied, that dog, pointing to the golden retriever, is much cuter than, and I leave a long pause for dramatic effect, maybe 10 seconds long.
Are you getting a look
and
at that
like,
point?
Is she gonna say, is he gonna say it? Is he gonna say it? And then I finally say, Azog. The second the offending words leave my lip, literally the second, like half a second later at most, a passing bird pooped on me.
Nice.
And Savannah just started laughing, and I kid you not, I don't think she stopped laughing until 2 hours later when we were home, and she was like, eventually died down, but it was like the longest laughter I've ever seen, because the timing was so perfect, right? What are the odds that the second you say this thing, passing bird,
you didn't see him out of the corner of your eye and saw him coming in and figured you'll wait for the moment?
Nope. Never saw the bird, actually. Oh, I just saw the results. And I was like,
was it a full forehead shot?
No,
or was
it was a shoulder. Shoulder and clearly small bird, so that helps. He wasn't like this gigantic seagull or some shit. That he was a very small but recognizable birdie poop. And I was like, after that, every time I see Azog, I like bow to him. I just fully revere him. If I'm about to say anything vaguely controversial, I start looking up to see if there's anything that could smite me because I'm offending Azog the Defiler.
Now, Savannah had the absolute proper response. What was your response?
I mean,
because this is a big moment, right? Exactly correct.
It was fun.
You gotta laugh with it.
It was hilarious. It was just like, what the fuck are the odds of that happening? You know?
I got hit by a pelican at the state fair.
Oh, those are big.
Yeah, it's a massive shit.
Oh.
And it was sort of a neck-shoulder blend.
Oh.
So you can give out a motherfucker.
Yes.
But you have a choice at that point.
Yeah.
You can rave and curse, you know, why?
Yes.
Or you can fucking laugh with everybody else because it is certainly funny to watch someone get shit on by a bird.
Yes, that's, and especially if they have just
said offending
words. It was perfect.
Be careful of your words, sir.
Most definitely. I'm scared of Azog now. I'm like,
speaking of state fair,
yes,
I might as well just file for my AARP card now early. Not that it's all that early, I'm afraid, but we have entered products into the fair for competition.
As a ground farmer?
Yeah. Our with canned tomatoes and canned beets and some crocheting or some knitting things that Gretchen has done have all been entered. We're in. And next Tuesday, so days away from now, I have to go out to my garden and select will hopefully be the blue ribbon winning squashes and zucchinis. It's funny. We're at a point in time where it's all up to the dirt now. Like whatever
yeah,
they decide.
You have done your work.
We've done what we can, and we've had tons of cucumbers and squash and all that. But now, this moment, they're going to present the best they can for us, and we will.
Yeah, man, you guys should see. Rich just showed me on his cell the pictures of his. It's not even like, it's not a huge garden. It's like the side of a house. It's not that much space. And as he was saying, it used to be sandy and crappy not too long ago.
Nothing but terrible weeds in there.
It's a forest now. There's food growing in massive amounts. It's beautiful to look at. Mr. Lauren Atkins from our episode a while back about gardening would be extremely proud of you.
I'd love to show him my 15-foot tall sunflower.
Serious. 15 foot tall.
It's tall as the eaves of the house almost.
Jesus.
And they just grow and grow. I mean, but that soil at this point has been pounded with nitrogen for 4 years.
Right.
So all of it.
It's packed with nutrients.
Yeah.
Just that's packed. Awesome.
And everything you drop in there grows.
That's so cool, man.
And being in a state that makes it illegal, you can grow medicine there.
You got some good weed growing along with the tomatoes. As
grown like crazy.
Good for you, man.
Craziest thing, just heard it. Well, doing this soil research, some people start mentioning seawater.
Hmm. Which super salty should kill everything, right?
Exactly. But if you use a quarter cup in 2 gallons and you do it one time, the amount of micronutrients in seawater, like from boron to,
right,
you know, 3 billion years of grinding down mountains, yeah, it is like this most incredible nutrients you could possibly offer them. I swear, we had reactions the next day.
Wow.
I did a control group.
Right.
Fearing I was going to burn it all.
Yeah, of course.
And it was, by day two, it was like, oh shit, do the rest now.
This is the good stuff.
3-4 inches of growth in a day?
That's insane.
Because, and granted, it is sort of perfect time now. The sun shines all day long.
Everything
and they are perfectly, you know, because we do the straw bales, they're all aligned to the sun. So the stuff that gets the sun all day is in a line in the yard where it gets it all. So that's why they're back in that corner. So the stuff in the shades, they get their half day.
Impressive.
And, they're growing like crazy.
That's awesome, man. That's so cool. And again, it's something that most people can do because this is not a huge backyard.
No.
This is a relatively little space. So of course, yeah, if you live in an apartment, that's a different story.
But even with an apartment, if you have a sun-facing balcony, you can,
right,
put two,
you can do stuff.
You can put 2 straw bales up there, and that's enough for 5 tomato plants. And if you live in the proper areas, 4, 5, 6 pot plants.
Not bad, my man.
The state prefers you grow your own.
I dig it. That's big congratulations to Mr. Retriever.
So we'll have to have a report and we'll see how it goes. I think, you know, the funny part is you get a participation ribbon just for entering,
yeah,
which I think is hysterical because I did fight against
participation
trophies.
Of course.
But I never was against a ribbon.
Okay,
like,
okay.
You played a good season. Here's your participation ribbon. I was fine. It's when it went to medals and it's like everybody gets a trophy.
Right.
That's when I sort of lost my mind and said, you people are crazy. I'm out of here.
That's funny,
but on a complete flip, but I got my damn participation ribbon. I was like, yes, but I got what was deserving of the moment.
Well,
I did participate.
Next time you come by, please bring a tomato. I want to try.
Oh, I'll bring a whole bunch. The only reason I didn't bring any right now is like we're waiting because tomatoes are like 10 days
away. Almost harvest.
Oh, right. We've got these gold cherry tomatoes that are the sweetest things I've ever tasted.
Sweet, man.
And you got to enter 5. So we're sort of pulling them off slowly because we want the best 5 to be ready. But if you keep them on there, they'll crack.
So yeah, it's a
delicate
crazy timing.
Moment, man. I'm like, got the ruler out and to make sure they're the right size. Because I don't know. I'll send pictures of them.
I'm down. I want to see it.
And maybe we'll have a picture of a ribbon next time.
That would be sweet. Fingers crossed. Now, since we're going in completely no logical order whatsoever, let's just jump into random things. I have to tell you one. So, I have a friend who trains in jiu-jitsu. And lately started out as, I don't know what the hell got into his mind, but it started out that anytime he takes somebody's back and is about to sink in a rear naked choke, he goes, Daniele Bolelli sends his regards. And most people, of course, don't even know who the hell I am, but it sounds ominous, you know, to hear this Italian name being, as you are about to get choked out. It's like straight out of The Godfather 2, right? Marco Corleone. I love that. So Daniele Bolelli sends his regards right before choking someone out. A few friends thought it was hilarious and so started doing the same thing. So I'm truly hoping it catches on because this is one of my claims to fame. Like some random person who has no idea who I am just because it becomes a thing in their jiu-jitsu school start doing it. And okay, my official dream is that one day I go train at some random jiu-jitsu school. Somebody takes my back. He's
doesn't
choking
know who
me.
You are.
Doesn't know who I am. And then goes, Daniele Bolelli sends his regards. And that would be perfect.
There's a great story I heard one time that Matt Damon and George Clooney were doing a movie. And supposedly he's a notorious prankster.
Right.
So they kind of had a slow day or something. It wasn't a shooting day. He had some dudes go scoop up Matt Damon and start driving him around some mysterious European village. And after about two hours, one of them leaned back and said, Mr. Clooney says hello. And sent him on his way.
That's funny,
man. That's so fucked up. I love it.
The thing when people don't know it is, I had one that was absolutely fucking hilarious, where I'm rolling with somebody in jiu-jitsu. And, you know, you chit-chat every time somebody got a tap, then you stop 10 seconds, you chit-chat. At one point, you know, really nice guy, and he goes like, hey, you know, it's like your accent and stuff. He's like, it sounds like just like somebody who was on Rogan's podcast a couple of weeks ago. And I'm like, and of course, being an asshole, I'm like, really? You don't say? That's crazy how that works out. And then, like, we're all conversing. And then after a while, he's like, what did you say your name is? I'm like, Daniele. Oh, my God. It's you have the same name as that guy.
That's crazy.
I'm like, you for real?
What are the chances?
That is amazing. How could that possibly work out? I milked it for another 10 minutes until eventually he put two and two together. It was so funny, man, where he was like, no matter how many pieces of evidence added up in his brain, the idea that it was actually me that was not clicking, and it was just hilarious.
You didn't finally get to get him in a hold and Mr. Bolelli says hello.
That was basically how it worked out. But I forgot how it was finally revealed, but it was funny because it lasted forever. So I had a blast with that one. That was, and speaking of things I had a blast with, somebody sent me on Twitter the greatest tweet in the history of tweets. I have to read it to you. God damn it, I didn't write down their Twitter handle, so I can't give proper credit.
That's a strange tweet.
You check this out. This is what's coming up. Are you ready? Your accent is to English language podcasts what very large penises are to porn. Shocking. Impressive, intimidating, enviable?
Enviable.
Thank you. Not for the easily astonished. Bravo, sir.
I ain't been hanging around for nothing.
I am so proud.
Old giant cock voice.
How many drugs do you need to have in your systems to come up with it? B, I am so proud. I'll put that on my business card.
That's not a bad list.
If I had a business card, but still, yeah. You
put it on your Twitter banner.
Right? I like that. It should be in the description.
But yours is already so great. I mean, how are you going to improve upon Ray's middle finger, defiant smile? That's pretty great, too.
Right.
And look what it got you. Trips to Italy.
Yeah.
Gelatos in the heat.
Not bad.
Not a bad combo.
Not bad.
There's been a terrible passing in the world.
Do tell.
Mad Magazine shut down.
Ah, yeah.
None of that means much to you, but for us,
no, it's
defiant
bad.
Fellas from the 80s, it was a big deal. I used to love that thing. Spy versus Spy. Sergio Aragonés, I can't remember his name, but he's the guy who always drew the little cartoons in the margins. And just genius. Tell such funny, tiny little stories. Often with boobies.
Wasn't selling anymore?
Magazines are dead.
Yeah, that's a thing that's insane. That like,
and 12-year-olds, why are they going to look at Mad Magazine when they can watch horrific anal porn?
Well, but that's the thing, is like the publishing industry that has been such a huge part of human life.
Yeah.
People read newspapers to get their news. People read magazines. People read books. That has been a huge thing. It's basically dying.
Totally dying.
Newspapers hardly exist. Man, there's even like a martial art magazine that I would write for in Italy. I started writing for them in like the mid-90s or something, right? Maybe late 90s. And it used to be this humongous 170-page magazine sold all over Italy. I would do an article and I would get a bunch of letters back then before even emails and stuff. Now I look at the same thing and it's like a 60-page fanzine, basically, with just news about the various associations that are the only one who keep them in business by buying copies, because nobody buys it, right?
And think about how writers used to come along. They used to like sci-fi guys. They'd write little short stories for Omni and stuff.
Of course.
I don't think that's in... No. I haven't seen a copy of Omni in a long time.
No, that stuff is... it's weird how's that changing.
It's so weird. I mean... We get the LA Times on Sunday just because it's kind of nice to drink some coffee and relax and flip through the paper. But the problem is that news is 12 to 15 hours old.
By then you have already read it 17 times on the net.
And I've already seen what happened in the aftermath, you know?
Yeah.
Have you ever heard, there's a show, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I'd never heard of it.
Yeah.
But we started watching.
Danny DeVito, right.
Exactly. We watched, it was so old that he wasn't even on the first season.
Oh, wow.
But what was amazing is 18 years, it seems like, that's been going on. Because they only do like 6 of them or 8 of them.
No,
see when it started.
Can't be. No.
Or maybe they have 18 seasons and they do one every 6 months.
Let's see. Always Sunny in Philadelphia. It started in 2005. That's a long time.
Okay, so not 18, but 14.
Yeah, is it still going right
now?
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, they have done, yeah, from 2005 to present, 13 seasons. That's hardcore.
And what we noticed, you know, we went back and started at the very beginning. It's 4x3, like the shape of the TV used to be, yep. Like it's kind of square. The terrible, terrible quality. Like sure. What we thought was broadcast quality is just unacceptable now. No cell phones. I mean,
yeah,
little flip phones,
of course.
But nothing like it. Like there's a shot of the bar and there's guys looking at newspapers. There's no iPads laying around. It is impressive and terrifying how quickly this technology jumped in. And the fact that grandmothers know how to text and tweet means we really are fucked.
Yeah. My grandmother doesn't, but she's 95. So
she's kind of out of the category a little bit.
Exactly.
She's probably just happy to make a good BM.
She can't even use her cell phone. Like she has a little flip phone. She doesn't even understand how to work it. It's poor lady.
She can say hello still?
Yeah. She's, you know, but it's trippy.
Tony Bennett. We went and saw Tony Bennett. He's 92 years old and sold the Hollywood Bowl out, or a good part of it, like 16, 17,000 people in there. And it's like, after that Sherman Brothers movie, I've always been terrified because Bob Sherman was sort of controlled by his younger son. He'll probably sue me if he hears this, but it's pretty accurate. We'd take him out and kind of play bad piano so the old man could sing the old hits for the people.
Right.
It was something very unsavory, shall we say it, going on. So I was like, oh my God. Are they back there? They got Tony in a box and waiting to And no. He like strolled out and like hit it and was getting those notes and
92 years old.
It was impressive. Well, he did introduce his piano player 9 times.
Well, you know.
And he forgot some lyrics, but
it happens.
Like I was saying, I'd be happy if I take good shit when I'm 92.
No, forget it. I have a story from one of my favorite books ever when it comes to history. Is this? It's all accurate history, but it reads like a novel, even though it's all very well documented. It's called The Little Knights of Pine Ridge. It's the story of this Lakota family from like the 1870s down to the 2000 or something. So it goes through many generations of this family. I always think of it as a comedy book because there are so many little jokes there that makes me laugh. Every time I give it to somebody, they cry for 3 days because I take certain things for granted, like, you know, the Wounded Knee Massacre, stories of dead babies, and it's not exactly comedy to most people, but I think like that part to me is like, yeah, I've heard that 10,000 times. So, but hey, look at this joke that they crack in the next page. So I have a slightly different view than most people on it, but it's an awesome book. They have this one story that they tell that's genius. So these guys live on the Pine Ridge Reservation in pretty Spartan conditions in the middle of nowhere. And they say it's a super cold winter. And even for some of these guys who are studs, who are used to really harsh conditions, they are freezing their asses off. So they are in their little cabin. The whole family is huddled around this wood stove. Nobody wants to move an inch because you stay, as long as you are within 4 inches of the stove, you're semi-warm. If you go any further, you freeze. There's been a blizzard. It's way below zero temperature. It's insane, right? And they are knock, knock, knock at the door. And, you know, nobody wants to get up and leave the stove. Finally, somebody get up. And it's like, fuck, okay. They get up, they open the door, and it's their neighbor. This guy who lives like 3 or 4 miles away, he's 93 years old. He just showed up on horseback, just took a horseback ride for 4 miles right after the blizzard. He's wearing a light jacket and a scarf around his head. That's about as far as he can go. But he's basically wearing like spring clothing. And everybody look at him like, what the hell? You know, the guy is 92, 93, and he's still going out hunting for his food. He rides horses, and he say he just doesn't feel the cold. You know, he grew up, he was 92, 93 in what, the 1940s, 1950s, something. So he grew up at a time when he participated in the Battle of the Little Bighorn. Wow. He was there at Wounded Knee. He grew up, he was born in a teepee, lived as a nomadic buffalo hunter his childhood and his early years, and he said this guy just was not wired the way other people are wired. And the guys saying this are people who, from most of us, are absolute studs, who are used to conditions who are way harsher than anybody living in a city could ever even conceive. And they look at him like, oh my God, this guy's on a whole other level. But can you imagine being like 92, 93, horseback riding, hunting, going in the middle of a blizzard like...
You can hope so.
It's a little nippy today. Yeah, check that out.
I better get my scarf.
Yes.
So did he have rabbits for everybody? Some Hassan Pfeffer?
I don't remember the rest of the story, what he was. But he was just coming by to say hello right after the blizzard. Because, feel like getting out of the house on my horse today.
Have you ever read any of the Terry C. Johnson novels? This guy...
I have not.
I can't remember who his main character was, but he loves the Nez Perce, and he did interesting things where he would get diaries of a lot of these army officers and their wives and be able to follow their end of it, of how it went, and so...
No, never read it.
Historically accurate. I can't remember what his main character is. That guy kind of shows up in a lot of stuff. Manly Mantooth something. Anyway, those are pretty great. You probably dig them.
Yeah, he has a lot of stuff I'm reading right now on Wikipedia, thanks to the wonders of Wikipedia. They're very much on my type of stuff.
Yeah. They read really well, too. I was lucky enough, when we were doing our Walmart book tour stuff, I got sent up to Montana in December to go interview him. And oddly enough, it was a break in the winter.
Crazy story about him I just read, that he killed one of his main characters after 10 million novels, and he told his wife that he thought he wouldn't live long after killing his character, and he sure didn't.
No, I was there like months before he died. I didn't even know he was sick.
Crazy.
He wrote some really nice stuff, gave me a bunch of books.
Huh. Sweet.
Definitely worth it. I always go up to Bart's Books in Ojai. That's a convertible bookstore. It's literally... open air.
Right.
But all the bookshelves are protected. And,
interesting.
I'll find one of the better ones for you, because I think might be something to... A good palate cleanser between History on Fire readings.
Yeah, the other day, man, I was... Savannah was like, you're cranky today. And I just sent her a couple of texts. And then I'm like, no. And then I realized I spent the last 3 days reading 1,000 pages about... babies suckling on the boob of their mom was just being shot, so they got blood coming into their mouth and all of that, because it's like researching the Wounded Knee Massacre from 1890. I was like, and I think that I've read enough of that stuff that nothing fazes me anymore, but then I'm like, okay, maybe there's a chance that it's bothering me a little bit, that is getting to my mood a tiny bit.
You'll like these books. He gets into the tactics. He's playing both sides of it. And,
I'll check it out.
Clearly, the guy looked like he was ready to go join him out on the reservation the way he dressed even then.
I'll check it out.
So, most you were talking about buffalo hunters.
Yes.
The Spanish bring the horses in the 1540s?
Yeah, they bring them early on, like even... when they arrive in Mexico, 1519, 1520, 1521.
But obviously, the Native Americans got a hold of them pretty quickly, or was it another couple hundred years?
It's not until the one moment that, of course, they got horses before, but the one moment where really they got massive amounts of horses was in 1680. There was a revolt across New Mexico and Arizona, the Pueblo Revolt, where all these tribes, like the Hopi, the Zuni, those guys who got conquered early on, like probably in the 1540s, they kicked out the Spaniards, they successfully rebelled, kicked out the Spaniards, and they got their hands on thousands of Spanish horses. And by the time the Spaniards will ever be able to come back to this area, these horses have been traded, they are already like gone.
So they even
ridden,
that's how the Great Plains Indians got them. They came from these guys in the New Mexico area. And
exactly. They trade them.
That's good trade.
Absolutely. So they start moving north, and that's when those tribes, in a matter of just a few years...
So it wasn't generations. It was like...
No, they go really quickly. They adapt to it and they become master horsemen. By the late 1700s, some of these tribes are just... They look like they are born on a horse. And probably for the second or third generation, that's true. But that's nuts. Because when you think about it, it's maybe in only 100 years, they go from just no horses to looking like people who have had horses for 10,000 years.
Wow. So the Dothraki learned quickly.
And the Dothraki learned very quickly, yes. That's how it works.
So when wagon trains come across? Late 1600s? The first brave people making their shot?
Across? Yeah. No, that's late. That's
so it was like, after Louisiana Purchase.
Yeah, that's and even then, not right away.
So it's early 1800s.
Yeah, even mid, possibly, because wow. What you get is that you got in 1849, well, 1848 is the end of the war between Mexico and the United States.
Right.
So U.S. acquire, quote-unquote, Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, California, little bits of a bunch of states around it. That same year in 1848, they discover gold. And so then in 1849, there's the gold rush, and that's when massive amounts of people want to move from the East Coast, come to California to try their luck on the gold rush. And so that's when suddenly you have these massive wagons trying to come through the Great Plains, which are still fully native land. So that's where things get a little sketchy there.
And by then, they'd had horses for 150 years.
Yeah. Now they have had it for quite a while, and yeah, that opens a period from the 1850s to 1877 of just massive warfare on the plain. Because until then, the U.S. didn't really care about the Great Plains. You know, technically they had acquired title to the land from the French, which of course they don't have title, but they, you know, if you plant a flag somewhere and you are European, you have title. Native title is not recognized. But, you know, U.S. was like, okay, slowly, okay, send Lewis and Clark to explore, take a look out there. Oh, thanks for the news. But they're, you know, taking their time moving west. But when that happens, so late 40s, early 50s is where the expansion starts kicking in. And so these tribes that have been around for a long time, they know about the existence of these white guys further east. That's when they really come in contact with them. And it's going to be 20 plus years of war.
Wow. Was there decimation by disease by then, or had that already run its course?
I mean, that has done, it's progressive, right? Because if you live on the East Coast, you get the diseases right when the British show up, even before with the some of the Spaniards.
So there was so little contact, they were pretty well...
Yeah, but then you still have waves of diseases that will, as you are more exposed, suddenly you are going to deal with more of these things.
But probably nothing on the scale that Central America...
No, but even like... Think of a tribe like the Mandan. The Mandan are like North Dakota, right?
Nobody
around that area on the Missouri River. They, in the early 1700s, like 1730s, when French explorers visit them, they say there may be about 15,000 of them. So it's not a big tribe. It's a relatively small community, but 15,000. 100 years later, by 1838, there's like little over 100 left.
Wow.
Not because of warfare. Almost entirely due to diseases. So it's like 99% mortality rate because of exposure to diseases.
And you would probably never give them all at once, so the smallpox would hit.
Exactly.
And then the next crazy thing would hit.
Yep, and then some crazy
cold that most people could survive, but not if your lungs have never experienced it.
And check this out. The Mandan were hit more because they were a sedentary tribe. They built fixed villages along the river. So A, they get more visits by European traders, which is good for trade, but bad because of diseases. B, when the diseases hit, you have nowhere to go. If you are a nomadic tribe, somebody gets sick in the next teepee, you're like, see you guys, we'll meet in a month over by the mountain. Everybody scattered. The ones who need to die, die. The ones who survive, they meet there. Nobody's sick. Okay, we're good till the next one.
Wow.
If you are a sedentary tribe, are you going to do? You can't just pack up and build a new village somewhere in... It's not going to work that way. So it's a different story. Crazy, huh?
Yeah, it's crazy.
And not that long ago. When you think about some of these stories are 1800s. Really,
that is
that,
that is
ago.
Astounding. I mean, I guess you could sell a scalp in San Francisco in the late 1800s.
Of course.
$10 is $10.
Yeah, last... there are a couple of other things, but like the major, the one that everybody remembered, the end of what they see as the Indian War, sort of the nail in the coffin, was Wounded Knee Massacre. That's 1890.
Wow.
That's the end of the 1800s. It's not even that far off. So, yeah, to cheer everybody up, I'm going to do probably a three-part series on History on Fire. I'm thinking The Life of Sitting Bull, who's a badass and is awesome. Part one.
He's got a terrible ending.
Part two is sort of the reservation period, the death of Sitting Bull, the beginning of the Ghost Dance, and part three is going to be sort of the end of the Ghost Dance, Wounded Knee Massacre, and what happens with that. So, yeah, that's going to be an intense one.
You know, throw some Chief Joseph in there to cheer everybody
right,
up.
Right, to make things a little... You know, because that's what I've done. Like, the War on the Black Hills, I try to put it on an upbeat thing. They win a little Bighorn. Crazy Horse Hands, really depressing, but much of his story is a badass story. This one is intense, because, yeah, Wounded Knee Massacre is as dark as it gets.
We found out Gretchen's cousin passed away, sadly.
Mm-hmm.
Self-inflicted from years of drinking, unfortunately, but pretty young. But while she was there, she found out her great-grandfather was full-blood Cherokee. So
where? Which state?
Tennessee, North Carolina.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so next time we make it out to North Carolina, she's going to go sign up because she's got enough in her.
Yeah,
I think it's the eighth at that point.
Each tribe has their own requirements. Some tribes are really strict. You have to be 50%. Some tribes are next to nothing as long as you have a drop from way back. It really varies tribe to tribe.
It's a pretty decent amount, though.
That's cool.
It'd just be fun. So, I mean, she has his name and everything, so that'll make it a lot easier. He's actually on the rolls, and she can prove direct lineage. So
that works.
I found myself a Native American because when they throw everybody out, I might get to stay an extra week or two.
Right on their ass.
Isn't it the Hopi who said, we were here long before the white man arrived,
and
we'll
be
here
long
after he's gone.
After you're gone. Yes, that's the one.
Well, that was a great gobbledygook of goodness.
Let's do one last.
Excellent. What you got?
Shout out to our repeated guest, Mr. Mark Chang. Check out what a badass he is. Mark is now in late 40s. I think 46, I want to say, 47. He's slightly older than me, not by much. And when I went to Big Bear a few days ago, right before I stopped where he's at to check out his... he was doing his testing for getting a black belt in Taekwondo. Now, check what's badass about it. Is the dude has been doing martial arts for like, I don't know, 30 years by now or something. He has like 10 million accomplishments in various ways. But somehow in his late 40s, he manages to go, you know, start back from scratch in another martial arts, work his way out to a black belt in that one.
Wow.
It's just perfect example of that concept of beginner's mind, right? Of just zero ego. You put back your white belt after 25 years or something. You train again. You go through the steps. Hey, you got a black belt in that one too. Pat on the back. Good job.
That's impressive.
That's pretty badass.
That's got to be hard to rewind. Isn't there so much like muscle memory and stuff with that?
Some is, but some helps because, I mean, his kicking game was always amazing, and that's what Taekwondo
so
is a lot about.
It didn't take long to get that white belt off of him.
No, but Taekwondo is a young man's game. You know, it's really, you need that flexibility, you need that high kicking, you need all that stuff. And I saw his testing. Man, that dude was flawless. He was just so amazing to look. I mean, it would be amazing to look at a guy move like that at any age, but somebody who's in the second half of his 40s doing that, is, and not because he has done it from when he was born, but I was like, Jesus Christ, that's some serious balls this man has.
When you say, like, looking at the movement, is that sort of similar, like figure skating, they have, like, just, you have to execute these skills and show that they are...
Yeah, and I mean,
properly,
when you look at it, you can see
there's a flow,
balance, how high you can kick, how powerful. Are you sort of wavering right after this big high kick, or are you perfectly, you know, it has that thing where you see him and he's like, man, that's a flawless use of the human body. That's just perfect the way it looks. So I was like, that's badass, man. I was very impressed because he's like such a... Even ego-wise, probably even more than physical, ego-wise, you know, you see the classic thing that you see is the guys who, they are badasses when they are young, they climb their hierarchy, and suddenly you see on that multiple degrees black belt, they slowly start training less, eating more, just that belly start hanging more and more. And they are not really training, right? They are there like,
belt.
you know, they paid their dues, but, and you see that with people in their 40s, their 50s, you know, you see it starting young. I mean, I understand you're 90 or something, I get it, you know, but people who are fairly young, who should be training and they are not, and they are living kind of resting on their laurels. And then you see Mark just like, I'm just going to be like any other student, putting on my white belt, starting the journey from scratch again, and just, boom, getting it done. And I was like, this man is a serious badass.
Well, we raised the kettlebell.
Yeah, so congratulations to Dr. Mark Chang.
Well, the funky music means one thing. That's the end of another fine episode of the Drunken Tiles podcast. Scattered, eclectic, awesome. What more could you hope for?
It's a story of our lives.
I heard that.
So one thing you can do for us, which would be sweet, is
donate.
That would be nice. Let's do that. Let's say thank you to... there's one of your old buddies is donating this time.
Really?
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
So let's go to Butcher Some Name.
Let the butchering begin.
The first name on the list is Rich Best Friend, Mr. Harry Johnson.
He's back.
He's back. I know you missed him.
I did. I even got some trouble for that.
It seems that it would be perfect, considering that this episode is sponsored by Manscaped. It fits with all your
we
jokes
can
about
it. I hope you got the mid-roll, because yes, that problem is over. He's going to be well-trimmed, Johnson, before you know it.
You got it. Then we got Samuele Rudelli, Jim D'Amico, Matt Chebre, Anthony De La Cruz, and Miguel Centeno.
Thank you so much, everybody.
You guys are awesome. Thank you so much for donating. If you are hostile to parting with your hard-earned cents in donations, but you want to support us anyway, using our Amazon link goes a long way. Now, our Amazon link used to be pretty solid. It was helping a bunch. I think it's because people are using apps now. They don't go through links that much, so that thing has dwindled to next to nothing. If you guys want to be the heroes who resurrect it, that would be very, very sweet. So the link is there in the episode notes, is on our site. Please use our Amazon link when you do your purchases on Amazon. Thank you to the usual folks that we mentioned. Anything else that we should throw out there?
Keepit.org continues to grow. $130,000 in donations from your fellow listeners. We keep helping folks all around the world, and it remains healthy and viable. What we could really use is another couple hundred people to join us. $25 gets you started, and you just roll it over and over again. And Daisy House, of course, for your incredible music track that gets our show started. You can go to DaisyHouse/Bandcamp. Find their records there. It's $1 for a track. I think it's $12 for an album. Help them out. Buy a record.
Sweet. Thank you, thank you, thank you. You guys have an amazing day.
Bye.
And so ends another awesome episode of the Drunken Tiles podcast. Be sure to keep your ears peeled for another mind-expanding episode coming soon. We'll be tweeting you as they come out. You can keep track of Daniele at D Bolelli. That's D-B-O-L-E-L-L-I. And you can find me on Twitter at Richimon1. R-I-C-H-I-M-O-N and the numeral 1. We'll see y'all soon. Woo!
Maybe I don't want to hear this.
No, you don't.
In questo caso, le provvidenze di Dio.
Duncan showed you the way, huh?
Oh, man, isn't that scary to think?
Nice. So don't kill people, do that instead.
This was great. It's
fucking awesome. And I love this conversation.
And nothing against chicken other than the fact that they are ugly and weird and strange.
We've been having a great hour here. Dun, dun,
dun. I completely got lost. Are we doing the outro or the intro?
We're outro.
Oh, we're outro. Okay, sorry. So let's continue. Did you ever see the movie Tombstone with Val Kilmer and...
Your accent, it just... Whatever that movie is you were trying to tell me about...
Can you translate for me, please?
I believe the word was Tombstone.
Yeah, that one, exactly. Just as I was saying, you know, Tombstone. Now, most everybody thought... Sorry. We'll do a cut on there.
Or not, that was something else.
No, that's maybe too powerful. What do I have to do? One day the rod shall teach you.
Get back to work.
Funky.
Podcasting. It's like radio, but you can cuss.